recording. Sorry, mate, my unorganized ass. All right, here we go. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Generation, the podcast, the official audio companion to the HBO Max original series, Generation. My name is Gigi Good, featured walk-on extra extraordinaire.
And I am Wembley Sewell, not a walk-on, just a fan of one of the walk-ons, editor-in-chief of them. Gigi, it's such a pleasure to be here with you, an even bigger star than before as of this episode.
Oh my God, stop.
I cannot stop, and I won't stop this entire episode. We are also joined once again by Generation creator Zelda Barnes, and the incredible Martha Plimpton is back again, starring as Megan in a much different light this episode.
Mm-hmm.
So let's begin by talking about episode 13, There's Something About Hamburger Mary's. Gigi, what is this episode about?
There certainly is something about Hamburger Mary's, I have to say. This episode was obviously a personal favorite of mine, and it might have a little something to do with the fact that we saw a little familiar face featured in it, and that may or may not have been mine, which was very exciting. And I'm so excited to finally be able to talk about it because we did it so long ago. Obviously, this holds a special place in my heart. We'll get to that sort of nitty gritty, but this episode is no exception to the drama. We see Megan being pushed to her limits. She's got to swallow her feelings about Nathan's sexuality and attempt to support him. A line is finally drawn between Greta and Luce. Chester and Beau have their first fight. And as Greta attempts to communicate with Riley, things kind of fall apart. So Megan is certainly not the only one not getting her way at the drag show. I was the only one getting my way at the drag show.
I feel like I'm going to have a pit in my stomach for the entirety of this conversation because there are so many gut punches. It's interesting because to me, it's one of like the heaviest episodes of the entire series, but it's the backdrop to it all is like one of the most affirming, vibrant, exciting places like in the world to me. So that initial that balance and like that contradiction in and of itself like is enough to just send me personally spiraling, but I know that we are going to get well into it. But on a much lighter note, Gigi, you looked stunning the entire episode. I know
I am
writing a letter to the Academy as we speak. I know that the Academy has nothing to do with television in some ways, but you know what, they should make an exception for you.
Listen, I rehearsed day and night for months for this gig, so
well, it paid off. I truly cannot wait to dig into the making of this episode with our guests. Welcome back to the program, Zelda.
Hi, I'm so glad to be back.
We also are so lucky to be back with the amazing Martha Plimpton. Miss Plimpton, if you're nasty, how are you?
I'm so good. Thank you so much for having me back.
I'm going to go ahead and say that parts of the night at a one Hamburger Mary's feel like immediate exposure therapy for Megan. Can you talk about what this change in like Megan's whole 180 that she has to do like feels like in her mind at this moment?
Well, I think it's funny because she's sort of convinced to go to this evening by Mark, by her husband, with a line that it's sort of deceptive. Because his line is, you can't steer the boat if you're not in the boat. And I think that, you know, that's sort of a smart thing for Mark to say to her because, you know, she's a control freak. And and so I don't think she goes there to experience something new or to share in her son's new reality or to try and understand anything. I think she goes because she knows that she can't be in control of something she's not part of. And so from the moment that they arrive, she senses that this is not going to be something she can control. And it begins with, you know, meeting the glamorous coven outside. You know, this coven, this beautiful, these gorgeous drag queens who are immediately taking to Mark and, you know, playing with him. And he's playing right back. that is the first sign that she's out of her element and she won't be able to control this thing. And that's why she's immediately thrown off balance. And then, you know, going in, that's where she's at. That's the mood she's in. And she's angry. And she's scared. Very scared.
Yeah, totally.
And it just kind of spirals from there. You know, as you mentioned, she sees Naomi doing this thruple thing, which is completely insane to her. It's just, you know, what is she doing?
And the first that she's, yeah, that's the first exposure she has
exactly.
to her. She has no idea,
exactly.
Right?
She has no idea. And it's just not something she wants to see her daughter doing, you know. And then, you know, as the evening progresses and as the tension gets higher, you know, and she sees this example of people being so loving and so accepting. And, you know, she sees Anna praising and loving on her niece, and she's guilt-ridden, but also trying to stick with her, her set of rules. You know, we talked about last time that people like Megan, they're terrified of the unknown in life. They don't like the inherent chaos in life. And so they need to have a set of rules and they need to have a set
scene
of boundaries.
And that is inherent chaos, like everything about that environment.
Absolutely.
Which is, I think that's the beauty of it, you know. But
absolutely.
Like that is,
and it is beautiful. But to Megan, it is like being thrown into the fire from the frying pan. Her immediate need to get out of there, and also her weird, like, why is Mark enjoying this so much? There's a jealousy there. There's a sense that she's lost her husband as well. Like, she's completely alone in this space, and she needs to get out. And I think what you said, Gigi, is, you know, she's spinning out.
Yeah.
She's totally spinning out. And I think that's an accurate description of her state of mind. I think it shifts a little bit when she senses that she's being dared by her son.
There's so much tension in the room that really only feels like it's coming from Megan. And it seems like everyone else who's there wants her to just be like, they're trying really hard to make her feel comfortable and to make her feel welcome. But there's clearly just that little voice in the back of her head that's not letting her do it. Martha, you begin the episode and end the episode with a very powerful performance, which really sticks in my head very clearly because, again, I was there watching you sing You Gotta Be on karaoke, which is one of my favorite songs. And it was stuck in my head for so long after that. But it was really very powerful in person. And obviously, at the time that I had been on set for this, I had not seen most of the episodes leading up to this. So I had really no idea what was going on. But you could tell on stage as you were singing this song, the words of the song and the meaning behind it and why you just, that song happened to have been chosen for you. It was very powerful. Mm-hmm. But I want to know, what was your process in preparing for this specific like karaoke performance, and what might be your interpretation of this in regards to it being a speech of sorts?
Right. Well, I'll be honest with you, because Megan is unprepared, I didn't prepare. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
And I was in denial the whole week preceding that I would have to do it. I was totally in denial and completely ignoring the fact that I would have to do this.
Yeah.
You know, I know the song the same way Megan knows the song, you know?
Right.
So, you know, I know it enough, but not enough to remember all the words. You know what I mean?
Sure. And then when those words are on the screen in front of you,
that's right.
In front of Megan, she's like, oh shit, this is what the song means.
Right. And I think, you know, and she knows the song, so she's relieved.
Right.
But also the song, I think it occurs to her during it, Nathan chooses it to make a point to her. But she also realizes during the singing of it that it's about her too. And I think it hits her while she's singing it that she is desperately lonely.
Totally.
Desperately lonely. And she feels totally abandoned by everyone, by her husband, by her children, you know, her friends. She feels totally abandoned. And she starts singing it, you know, as a, you know, as part of a dare, and, you know, singing it to like show Nathan despite that she can do this. And despite him.
A challenge.
But as she's singing it, she's realizing, oh my gosh, I am terribly alone. Do you know what I mean? And then, I mean, I don't know. Look, I don't know. In the process, I think we found that in the process of shooting it. We shot several different versions, as you know, Gigi, because you were there. Yeah. You had to sit through it all those times.
It was great every time.
But I think that's the world in which we sort of, that's what we sort of finalized. That's what we sort of landed on in the end.
Right. I mean, it was powerful. And it was like take after take. We were all just standing there in that bar just like, wow.
Thank you.
And I mean, obviously, you're not belting the song by any means at all. But like, I think that there's so much power also in the faltering. Like, you can hear the fear. Mm-hmm. You can hear the loneliness. You can hear the introspection in every single line. Like, I was like, damn. Like, you know, like, while I was, and it just ends and you're like sitting there, you know, with nothing but your vocals and the lyrics. And you're like, That was a lot, you know, that's a lot to process. And it makes me so, so curious as to like what's coming next. Like, where does one's brain, heart go after a moment like that? Especially when you're looking at Megan, you're watching Megan and you're like, let's talk about boats. Like, she seems lost at sea.
She's at sea. Exactly. Yes, exactly.
When Anna steps on stage and begins talking and, you know, when I was watching it from 2 feet away at the bar, I'm wondering which way is the direction going to go with Martha? Is this speech that's very touching, that's very heartfelt, and is hitting all the heartstrings of everyone else in the room, is this going to change Martha's mind? Or not, Megan's mind.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean,
So I...
Well, I mean, but that's a good question, because what I think what it does is, and we all have, I think we've all had a moment like this where we know we're wrong, but we just can't say it. We cannot go there. Mm-hmm. It will totally take away our whole foundation, everything. It's that core thing when you know you're missing out and you refuse to acknowledge it.
Yeah.
You know? And that's, I think, what the moment with Anna and her niece are doing. You know, that's what she's seeing. She's seeing this gorgeous, heartfelt, beautiful thing. And she's refusing to acknowledge it.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've all been there at some point. We've all been too proud or too shut down or too jealous.
It's a pride thing for sure.
At some point. And yes, it's a pride thing. Totally. And I think Mark is able to see that. He's able to see that and think it's beautiful.
I definitely think we've dropped all these hints along the way of Mark being a bit more open-minded than Megan, but Megan is just running that household. And so Mark really just has kind of no say in anything that happens. He has to like run everything by Megan first, but I think he really is trying to push her in the direction of acceptance. And I think he really wants to be close with Nathan. I think he really wants to get to know Nathan better. And I think he doesn't want to be those like absent parents who like can't emotionally connect with their children. And the truth is, he has that line where he says to Megan, like, maybe Nathan wants you there. Like, maybe he actually wants you to go. It's not really that Nathan, like, wants his parents at this, like, event with his friends. It's more just that he wishes he had the type of parents who could go to that event and, like, have fun and, like, be accepting and be totally fine with all of that. And I think Mark is trying really hard to kind of give him that safe space, and Megan is fighting it so hard that it becomes really difficult for their whole family to kind of connect.
We're talking about episode 13 of the HBO Max series, Generation. We're going to get into a lot more after a quick break.
Hey everyone, welcome back. We are talking to Generation creator Zelda Barnes and Martha Plimpton, who stars as Megan.
I'm curious from you, Zelda, why you chose to have Hamburger Mary's be the scene of this? Because I think some people could argue, well, why would you, or like, why would someone choose to bring, you know, someone who is a little bit more conservative, who does have, you could argue, like some vitriol in her heart? Like, why would you decide to place someone in a setting where they could maybe not be safe or affirming to other people in that environment? And I And I also understand, you know, Nathan's point of view where he's like, I really just want I want to show my mom like how beautiful this community is too. So can you talk a little bit about how you all approached kind of that thinking, or just again, the setting in general and the event in general?
Absolutely. I mean, this is another one of those conversations that we just had for so long in the writer's room. We talked about all the little details for so, so long. And it was kind of a series of really interesting conversations just about, do we want this to be a scene where we kind of like delve into the psychology of like Megan's feelings about this community, Megan's feelings about her children and her family. And we really do want to make it clear that like there are sympathetic aspects to Megan's character. Like she, yes, like I think I would not get along with her in real life for sure. But that doesn't mean that you can just write her off as horrible and the villain. And I think that it was really important to us to kind of see her in this environment, actually encountering this environment and seeing her battle between like, which road do I pick here? Do I pick like acceptance and love and like discard everything I've been taught my entire life? Because that's also just like not easy to do. And I think that she is really, really struggling with that in this moment. The karaoke moment when she gets on stage, it's like a stupid prank that her son pulled. But she also, I think Nathan is expecting her to storm off. And I think that she wants to kind of show him like, you don't know me as well as you think you do, maybe. Because I think as kids, we have so many ideas of like, who our parents are fundamentally that aren't always correct. And we make a lot of assumptions about our parents and what they're capable of and what they want. And I think that it can be very tricky to remember that our parents are people too and have lived full lives too. And I think that in that moment, Nathan kind of is forced to, Megan wants Nathan to realize like, no, I can actually do this. Like I can do karaoke in front of a room of drag queens and queer people. Like, and she kind of puts herself out there. And it is kind of this odd moment where she's leaving and then she gets called up on stage and she doesn't leave, which is definitely kind of, it's not her saying I accept you and support you, but it's interesting that she doesn't just like look at Nathan and is horrified and storms off. She actually stays and sings.
It is a step in her own way. It makes me very emotional, like to talk about, because especially as people who grew up and, you know, you had to go through the coming outs and dealing with unaccepting like family members, like to even just, I'm not one to give people like, you showed up. Like that's 100%. Just immediate credit.
Absolutely.
But like, just seeing that step is like, I have like chills, like thinking about the scene again, because it's like, you're right. She could have just left. She could have said something terrible. Like she could have said, fuck all of you. Absolutely not. But like,
no, I mean, again, exactly. Like, exactly.
Great. But like, it's, I think it's a big deal.
This is a little personal anecdote that is just, it's interesting that right now this story, like very much within the last couple of days, is lining up with my life a lot, because the other day my mom, I woke up to a picture that my mom sent me of her and my dad at our local town's pride parade, and my dad was wearing one of my t-shirts, which I really almost burst into tears because you could never have told me that my father would ever be caught dead wearing a Gigi Good t-shirt at a pride parade. And it goes to show you that you know, minds can change, and I guess you can take in more information as time goes on. And I actually ended up talking to my dad about this, and I thanked him for doing that. And he's really big on TikTok right now, which is weird, but he likes motivational TikToks. He sent me this TikTok that was this guy talking to an audience, some sort of TED Talk of sorts. And this guy said something along the lines of, as soon as someone stops talking to you is when you're going to listen. And that's exactly what happened, like, with my relationship, is I, you know, kind of just ruled it out. My dad is not on my side. I'm done. And then as soon as I stopped talking to him, he listened. You know, you see a lot of shows nowadays, shows and movies and what have you, that incorporate drag queens. And maybe it's just because it's a trendy thing, and maybe it's because drag is so big right now because of RuPaul's Drag Race. But I feel like in this episode, it's almost crucial to show that archetype of a person in the same room with Megan and Mark and every character. So I want to know from you, Zelda, about the importance of incorporating drag queens and how drag culture kind of influences you as an artist and as a queer person. And also, I'd love to hear from you, Martha.
Something we were thinking about a lot with this episode and talking about a lot is kind of like, Megan in another life, like, would have loved drag. Like, if Megan had been raised in, like, another environment, like, if you look at her personality, like, I feel like Megan would totally watch Drag Race. Like, and it is just kind of, you realize that it's not who she is fundamentally. It's, like, how she's been raised and what she's been taught throughout her life that has made her kind of into the person she is. And I think that, I don't know, I do think it's so interesting that at first she is kind of, like, she's not enjoying herself when she gets to Hamburger Mary's. And I think that, like, there are drinks, it's really fun. And I think that if it weren't for the fact that she's been told, like, queer is bad her whole life, like, she'd be having a great time. Like, and that was really important to us to show, like, that it's not entirely her fault. Mm-hmm. It's, like, it's a societal thing. It's a cultural thing that she's been dragged into. And, yeah, it's how she was raised. And I don't know. It's just, it was important to us to see Megan kind of interacting with people who she has been told not to accept, but who she actually, I think, in her, like, deepest, darkest place in her heart, like, kind of wants to accept and love, even though that's, like, just not what she's been told she's capable of.
I love that.
Yeah, I mean, I see it a little bit differently in that I think that Megan's choices are very personal to her. And I think that she makes these choices based on a personality flaw, her organizational issues, her type A personality. I see her as being a very fearful person. And I see her as having, maybe in her past, the fact that she was a young mother, that she was probably a mother before she was ready of her eldest daughter. I see that as being something that she does not want to repeat. And I think that her religion and her faith are a sort of convenient match for that. I mean, obviously, Zelda, you know, has a deep relationship to this character, so I'm definitely not contradicting you. But I definitely also think that she's a smart woman, Megan, and this is the way her smarts have led her. And it's very hard to let go. Of something like that. Very, very hard to let go, particularly when it's self-created. You know, her experience of drag is, I think Zelda's right. I think it were, if she did not have this life system, this life structure, this very rigid life thing, then she would love drag. But she's made a choice to believe in this very narrow set of rules. And that's what gets her through the day. And without those rules, it's spin out time. And I think putting her in this room with all of these incredibly beautiful drag queens is really, it's jarring to her because they are beautiful. And is that a woman? Wait a minute. It's just, it hits a part of her brain that can't compute.
Totally.
Do you know what I mean? But that is alluring. It's alluring and it's mysterious and it's an unknown thing. You know, so there's a battle inside her going on the whole time. Curiosity and denial of curiosity. You know, those things are going on the whole time.
Totally.
Speaking of beautiful, alluring, gorgeous, mysterious drag queens, the tables have turned and I have been dying all episodes to like be watching this one. And I have to ask you, Gigi, obviously you are no stranger to working a camera, but I must know, what was it like being in front of the camera in this scripted setting? And I have to say, I loved seeing you. I'm bursting with joy right now.
It was so much fun. Well, first of all, it's nothing like I've ever done before. It's nothing like Drag Race because, A of all, it is scripted and I am not playing me for all practical purposes. I'm playing drag queen number two. But what was so fascinating about doing this process was that we filmed this one episode over the course of like, 8 days or something like that? And it really brought you into the process of shooting from everyone's perspective. Like, I was in that one drag look, swear to God, 8 days a row for like 12 hours a day. Mm. And but it's so effortless and seamless in the finished product that it really just looks like there's a million cameras around the room and you never see one of them. So it was really fascinating to be a part of that aspect of filming. I've never really acted from a script, which was difficult to try and make everything, I guess, the same every single time, or as close as possible. But the thing that I really love the most is, like, you know, we had watched the show from the first season and had done this podcast and had obviously loved the show and loved the characters. But it really wasn't until I met the people behind the characters and met the people behind the production and, like, meeting the hair people, the stylists, of course, like, finally getting to meet Zelda and Daniel and Martha, everyone. It was just, like, such a warm, welcoming, so not stressful in any way, just, like, really fun. And it made me jealous that I was not on set every other filming day. But I don't know, it was just so magical, and it really made me want to. I had never had any interest in diving into scripted television before, but after that, even just as, you know, featured extra, whatever, it made me really want to do it again, in or out of drag.
Well, I could see you and Chester becoming best friends, but I also must ask you about the story behind the look, because it was indeed a look.
That was, well, they wanted me to not be Gigi Good, you know? They were like, you're not Gigi Good, because why would Gigi Good be at a Hamburger Mary's in Long Beach right now, of all times?
You're like, maybe I would be. You don't know.
Maybe I would be. So, of course, I wore two synthetic wigs on my head as high as I could get them, and my eyebrows were up to my hairline, and the makeup was very not what my makeup normally is, and it was really fun. I don't know if you know Marco Marco, the
legend
designer.
Yes.
So I had him make the outfit, and it was just a cute little simple glittery look. And of course, we had Joe Lopez was playing my scene partner, who was essentially dressed as J-Lo, which was just so fun. It was just a really good representation of drag in Long Beach or in Orange County. It was fun. It was just a really fun experience.
The OC I want to watch is just drag queens.
Yes.
It's just drag queens. Y'all, okay, well, while we have her, like, what was it like working with Gigi, like, on the other side? Obviously, we chat every single week, but I want to know.
It was amazing. It was so much fun. It was so fun to, like, see you on set. It was crazy. The cast was so excited that Gigi was there. I remember Haley Sanchez came, like, running up to me and was like, Gigi's here. And I was like, I know. It was really cute. It was really, really sweet. Everyone was so excited to be working with such a brilliant genius. And we had a really good time. Yeah, and I remember there was one shooting day where I think one of our ADs came up to me and was like, Gigi's hilarious. Like, Gigi was doing, like, such good improv. Like, we're definitely going to keep, like, some of these takes in. I was like, great.
I'm surprised they kept all that in.
Yeah. No, everyone loved it. It was amazing.
It was also incredibly impressive that you were able to be in heels for that long. I would not have been. I mean, I had to take my heels off between every scene. I don't know if you noticed.
Thankfully, everything was shot up from the waist up most times.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I truly was impressed.
Well, I'm so happy we got to talk today, and I'm so happy we got to once again have Martha on with us. It's such a joy to be able to talk to you.
Thank you.
I'm such a big fan of yours. I'm so happy we got to work together and talk again.
Me too. It's wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. And of course, Zelda, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me again.
Of course.
And thank you, Gigi, for being the star of the show in many ways as well. Obviously, Martha, you were always incredible. But Gigi, you also lit up.
Yes.
You
credit where credit is due, really.
In a beautiful way, too. I have to say it.
Thank you so much.
Exactly. Round of applause. Can't say how much, like, I love this episode. But
so
we'll
good.
Be back with more BTS reveals and exclusive generation commentary next week. Bye, y'all.
Bye, girls.
Generation the Podcast is a production of HBO Max and iHeartRadio, hosted by us, Gigi Good and Wembley Sewell. The podcast is produced and written by Phoebe Unter, written and researched by Sierra Kaiser, and engineered, edited, and mixed by Matt Stillo. It's executive produced by Ethan Fixell.
If you haven't already subscribed, rated, or reviewed Generation the podcast, please do so on the iHeartRadio app, HBO Max, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, be sure to watch the series itself on HBO Max. Thanks for listening.